Council Organizational Committee meeting to order. Welcome everyone in the audience and our presenters today. I think since we have a smaller group, what we'll do is we'll start out with just quick introductions so we know who's here before we get into our discussion with Heading Home Ramsey. So I'll end with us because I believe that by the time we get to the council table, we may have even more people here. But if we could start maybe with our presenters and then folks in the audience after that.
Thank you, Councilmember Brendeman. I'm Maria Wetherell, Ramsey County Veterans Services Director and the current chair of Heading Home Ramsey.
Lucy Zanders, Teresa Living Center. We do transitional housing and rapid rehousing on the east side of St. Paul. And I'm a part of the executive team, the secretary for the group.
Hi, and I'm Lonnie Adalin. I'm with Ramsey County. I'm a planner. I'm also the continuum of care coordinator.
Great. We're going to put you on the spot. Yeah.
My name is Deborah Palmquist. I work for Twin Cities Housing Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit provider of affordable housing, but I'm also on the governing board of Heading Home Ramsey.
Great.
And I'm Alexandra Pikowitz. I'm a community member for Heading Home Ramsey.
My name is Ann McInerney, and I'm the McKinney Bentel liaison for St. Paul Public School and the vice chair for Heading Home Ramsey, which is why my name tags up there.
Oh. Do we want to pull a chair up?
I don't actually have to talk.
We have much.
Well, if it comes to pass that you want to add, we will have at the ends, usually there's extra spots. And one of the nice parts is you get to be on this microphone and sound like you're on NPR. So, welcome. Okay.
Kirsten Birch with the City of St. Paul Office of Financial Empowerment. I'm the Fair Housing Coordinator.
Welcome. Stephanie. We like to do this just as people are walking in. If you could just introduce yourself. You're on.
I am Amber Gray with the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office.
Great. Welcome.
I'm Magnuson, also with the Sheriff's Office.
Welcome.
Ellen Waters, and I'm a consultant with Outside In, which is working on individual single adult homelessness with Heading Home.
I'm Marcia Mormon, I'm the Council Hearing Officer and a Senior Analyst working at Housing.
I'm Jamie Burke from Community Papers.
I'm Katrina Hartz Taylor. I am a Public Services Manager for the St. Paul Public Library and manage the George Lab Works Central Library.
Oh, very interesting.
Holly Houston, Council of Research.
Kasim Basuri, Council Member for Ward 6.
Jane Prince, Council Member for Ward 7.
Amy Brenmon, Ward 5.
Rebecca Naker, Ward 2.
Welcome, and thanks for that, and thanks for the folks who walked in, and we had to put you right on the spot. No problem. And again, so there a few of our colleagues will be coming in as we go, and we'll just keep rolling. So a big welcome today. It's wonderful to have you here presenting. We have had so many conversations between last year and this year that involve so many different organizations who are doing really important work, and what I think our ultimate goal was to have an understanding not only of what different groups were doing and different with Heading Home, with all of the different organizations that are represented as part of your board are doing, but how is that work connected with the work of Ramsey County? How is that work connected to the work of the state of Minnesota? Because we realize that unsheltered homelessness, housing stability and everything in between is really an issue that extends beyond the city's municipal boundary, and we want to make sure that we're doing our best work in partnering with organizations who are on the ground and doing the work every day. So we're going to turn it over to you to present, and I think that our approach, as always, to ask questions as we go. And as I mentioned before, when Maria and I were talking ahead of time, I said that it seems that a lot of times the way it flows with this council is by the time we get to the end of the agenda, the questions are asked, and we've covered everything, and it's like gold stars. So it's great. So welcome. It's wonderful to have you here today.
Good. Thank you so much for having us, for inviting us. We'd like to offer a special thank you to Deborah Padgett, who was unable to be with us today, and Councilmember Necker for coordinating in this invitation and providing this opportunity for us to get together and talk about what we do at Heading Home Ramsey. Just quickly, the outline, the agenda, I'll just mention that we have added a couple of slides. thought that they might be helpful just in general to understand, and we'll point those out as we come to them. So the slide presentation that you might have in front of you will have a couple of extra slides. What we'll be doing today is working through the PowerPoint to talk about what exactly is Heading Home Ramsey, and who and how do we serve the homeless? What is our role? What is the role of the organizations that are participating members of the governing board? What are we working on right now? We'll spend a little bit of time on that because we are working on a whole lot of efforts in a whole lot of areas. And I think that will actually, I think, come out as we talk and perhaps through your questions as well. And then how can we support and be supported by the City Council from St. Paul. We're very interested in improving how we work with local government in all aspects, and the City of St. Paul is an important partner in so many of the things that we're working on right now today. So we're interested in talking about how we might look at that going forward into the future. So we'll turn it over to Lucy.
Okay. So just as a part of really becoming familiar with the work that we do at Heading Home Ramsey, first of all, you may ask, what is Heading Home Ramsey? And what we are is we are a continuum of care. We serve Ramsey County, and we are the Ramsey County Governing Board for the continuum of care. And we try to bring in a wide variety of partnerships in order to serve homeless people in the best way that we can in Ramsey County. It is all inclusive of all the resources within the homeless response continuum. And if you ask HUD what does continuum of care means, it is defined by HUD as the full range of community homelessness response system. So anything that would have to do with being a response to homelessness is a part of what we do as the continuum of care. Okay. For Ramsey County, our continuum is really set up in all the categories that you see listed on the board. In terms of prevention, meaning that we try to not engage families in homelessness or singles in homelessness. So we do have a prevention aspect of trying to make sure families don't even go down the road for homelessness. And so when we talk about prevention, we talk about offering families some type of support services or financial assistance before they actually get to the part where they're actually experiencing homelessness. So it's not, we try to make sure that they don't have to have that experience with the system. So if it means that we need to, if it's because of back rent, some type of negotiation needed with landlords, we try to get in there before they actually get into the system and experience homelessness.
And I'm just going to interrupt you. That is a question that I think that comes up with us a lot is, so how do you reach people before they're at that point of homelessness? Because usually we find out that people are in crisis after they've experienced that trauma of being displaced. And so how do you do that?
So as a part of one of the things, we have coordinated entry. And so usually what happens when families feel like they're going to be homeless, you know, maybe they have a date from a landlord that they're going to be evicted, they're going to actually go through the experience of being homelessness, they will try to, I want to say, get ahead of it. And so we have a system called coordinated entry where they, in order to access, I want to say, prevention, they go through and they tell their story about why they feel like they're going to be homeless. And so that is done through, we assess them, we do different things to really find out their situation. And as a part of coordinated entry, then they can be diverted to prevention right away so that we don't have to put them into the homeless system.
And I would also add that, you know, obviously we work with all of the programs that might appropriately respond to people that are at risk of homelessness. So part of Heading Home Ramsey is the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, and we administer those grants to the community, to a whole spectrum of organizations that are a part of our board. So they offer support and assistance to people at risk of losing their housing. We also, of course, are networked with the county and with all of the partners that are part of the governing board, and really do attempt through our contact phones to divert people to resources that will support them in maintaining their housing. So we do work at prevention very, very hard, and I think it's one of the things that is not in people's awareness about the work that we do, but it is a big part of what we do.
Yeah, it's hard, and I think that's why I'm asking the question, is because that's also challenging. How do you identify ahead of time that people are having these issues? Are you aware that Smurls is working on a pilot project here in the courthouse on, is it, a couple days a week where they work in a housing court?
Landlord mitigation, and to make sure that they don't actually get into, like, any kind of legal problem.
Yeah.
And I think the county is also represented at housing court to try and support people in that situation of actually pending eviction. So we are aware of those partners, and Smurls is a partner in the work that we do.
Right, that's what I was hoping to hear. I imagine we really didn't know that that Smurls was doing that work in Ramsey County Courthouse until a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And I think the pilot's fairly recent.
They're really an important partner in many aspects. And I think we just recently did Ramsey County did an examination of our family shelter system, and for example, and they were a partner that we actually looked to for feedback on, you know, how is that working, how are we doing in that space. So they're there at all points in the continuum.
That's great. Ms. Prince had a question.
Yeah, and I believe the Dispute Resolution Center is also doing that work, if that was not mentioned, because when we did the preventing eviction event
landlord
at the Sunray Library.
Yeah.
We heard some great work is being done by DRC.
You know, that type of an event is the exact, and thank you so much for your sponsorship of that. That type of an event is the exact thing that we feel is going to raise the bar in terms of how we partner. Will help us to be more effective partners, and will help our partners to understand where they can contribute.
Well, and what I appreciated was that you came to my office, and we really thought, you know, there'll be three landlords there, but let's do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And to have a full house was amazing.
That was really wonderful.
It did become clear that landlords, and we had a couple of big ones, but mainly mom and pops. But it was clear that they really want to be part of the solution.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Very hard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
Sure. Thank you.
So as another part of the continuum, we have a branch called Outreach. And what we do is we provide resources with limited support and case management or services to people who are staying outside or in other places not meant for habitation. We have drop-in centers, emergency shelters, and then the coordinated entry aspect, as well as supportive housing, is a part of Heading Home Ramsey. And the coordinated entry aspect is somewhat, I won't say a new piece, but it's probably the most unfamiliar piece that people experiencing homelessness will be directed to. And that coordinated entry piece is a HUD mandate piece for us. But what it does is it puts families and singles on track to being assessed so that we really know what their needs are. It puts them in the category where we could do assessments. We can then prioritize their situation and also make referrals into programs for them. When families are at the point where they have to go to the coordinated entry system, you know, usually they're in dire need. You know, it could be that I'm riding the bus with my children right now today. But what we do is we go and we look at the family and we assess really, truly what their housing needs are, and then we try to direct them to those resources. But, you know, it could be a little bit frustrating, especially when you say, I need to talk with you about your current situation, and you're going through and you're asking them questions. But all of the questions help us really realize and define what type of services they need from us as a part of Heading Home Ramsey. The governing board for Heading Home Ramsey, we're kind of made up of formerly homeless people, housing providers, service providers, federal, state, and local government, advocacy organizations, schools, hospitals, and law enforcement. And all of those agencies, some of the agencies are actually funded through the collaborative, and they're responsible and they are required to be members of the Heading Home Ramsey Board, so that Heading Home Ramsey Board, so that you know what every piece or every segment is responsible for and is doing. And so we've listed a couple of the collaborative organizations, which is in no way all of the organizations that actually touch our homeless families, because you see things like Solid Ground, St. Paul Public Schools, Teresa Living Center, but there are other partners that, I won't say they're like the silent partners, but they are the partners that are at the table when we have meetings that actually contribute greatly to the Heading Home Ramsey Governing Board. And they're partners with people like the library. usually when families are experiencing homelessness and they need to get out of the cold, the library is the first place they go. They can plug in their phones, get their phones charged. They can get in and out of the cold. And so the library do offer services there just to, we do have groups that do assessments even at the library. They help kind of redirect them. So because they are such a vital part of where people go when they're experiencing homelessness, we really look at them as a good partnership in the work that we do. St. Paul Public Schools and social workers, they have children who are actually in school, families experiencing homelessness, and they are a great partner with us in terms of identifying families and trying to see to it that, there's no interruption in their child's education because of homelessness. We have work being done with the police department. They had a lot of publicity when you have people riding on trains, maybe in areas that they shouldn't be, and they actually take them to cold weather winter spaces when they're not where they should be, or when they are trying to get in out of the cold, I guess I should say, you should say. So the police working with service providers, and I must say that even like in the work that I do, and I work with people in transitional housing or rapid rehousing, I think the police department, they just recently announced that they are trying to assist us in the work. But, because sometimes mental health is a big issue of it, I think they have really taken a step forward and actually did training for police officers to help be that, that I won't say first call for help, but they actually are helping in the homeless situation.
Jump in.
Yes, go ahead, jump in.
I was just going to just comment that I think some of the point of the organizations that are partnering that Lucy is like talking about right now is just to describe the fact that the continuum includes not only housing providers, people that work directly with people that need support in housing or need to find permanent housing, not only service providers, so case managers that might support people in maintaining housing, but we work with a full spectrum of partners that are an absolutely essential part of the continuum of services. So the Heading Home Ramsey is the mandated entity for the continuum of care for Ramsey County, and that is a federal mandate. But the continuum of care, the large C continuum, is actually inclusive of the entire community of partners, including law enforcement, schools, housing providers, people serving veterans, Ramsey County, and in many different aspects. So just to point that out.
All right. And Ms. Naker had a question, I believe.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate this presentation already. This is really helpful to clarify what Heading Home Ramsey is. And I understand the coordination function, the bringing together of all of these different providers along the continuum of care. I'm wondering if Heading Home also has an accountability function, both for the groups that are part of the continuum and also for, say, funders and others, policymakers. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're facing a crisis of unsheltered homelessness in St. Paul right now. So does Heading Home Ramsey organizations come together and say, we're all doing great work, clearly there's this additional need that we're not all meeting together. What do we do to meet it? What do we need to hold our funding partners accountable for? What do we need to be asking of them? What do we need to be asking of policymakers? I mean, is that the kind of work that the coalition can do? Does Heading Home have the authority to kind of compel additional contributions or work from its members or not?
Well, me speaking as a provider, I do know that in order to get like much of our state funding and federal funding, it is definitely accountability where, you know, we have definitions, I want to say, for services that we offer. And we're actually, you know, we're visited by our funders to actually see that we're doing the work that we say we're doing. We have a homeless management information system, and, you know, we go in and we actually identify the clients that we're serving. We have some milestones that we have to kind of measure ourselves against in order to, first of all, really identify that we are, you know, serving the population that really needs to be served, but also that we're helping them advance their life, you know, meaning that they may come in one condition where they need total support, but hopefully, and it's all according to the system measures that we have set up, by the time they are ready to leave, that we've showed some kind of advancement in their situation. So there is a big set of accountables built into the system that we are doing our work on the federal level as well as the state level in terms of the work that we do.
Maybe comment on that.
Yeah.
I think that some of what you're asking, I think, is, you know, how are we accountable to the community for some of the larger issues that – is that – am I getting that right?
Yeah, and I mean, sort of what you were just describing is the accountability that your service providing organization has to, say, the state and the feds, mm-hmm. and that's there. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if the existence of Heading Home Ramsey as another entity adds a level of accountability, or maybe I should say critical thinking about the problem and solutions to the problem that everybody together, collective action, I guess. Or is it more just all these organizations that do this work come together, talk about what they're doing?
No.
Okay, so like that's what I'm getting at.
Okay, so just first comment would be in a more general sense, all of the participating partners hold themselves accountable for participating in the community's conversations and work in these areas. But Heading Home Ramsey does not possess a specific authority for requiring that they do so. They do so because it's part of their unique missions. So I think one of the things that, you know, we're hopeful of can happen is that we would actually have a place at the table where we are representing Heading Home Ramsey and we can bring a more coordinated response to the efforts by being present as a representative of Heading Home Ramsey. As of right now, we're not always there specifically as the executive committee for Heading Home Ramsey or as a specific representation of Heading Home Ramsey. So I think there is improvement that can be gained there. I'm going to just comment just briefly on the historical perspective of how we became Heading Home Ramsey versus the continuum of care. There used to exist a homeless advisory board, and that was actually initiated by the county and the city and had representation from the city council and from the board, and had many of the same partners. In 2014, that particular advisory board was dissolved and merged into the continuum of care and then became Heading Home Ramsey. So it actually had more of a role like what you're describing. I think when it merged into Heading Home Ramsey, we have the priorities of responsibility to the federal and state funding requirements, and they must take priority because that's the way we bring funds in. But at the same time, we have a huge amount of commitment and effort focused from all of the partners in the general work that you're describing to try and improve the continuum over time. Does that help? Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and And I kind of just want to say as a group, and the people that we have at the table on any given time when we meet, I think we have very committed and people who are passionate about ending homelessness. You know, so for every touch point that we may as providers have to touch, you also have people who are out doing the work and asking the tough questions on, okay, so we did this today, what are we going to do tomorrow? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a very passionate group, and we try to always keep the main thing the main thing, you know, trying to address homelessness. So,
Ms. Anker. Thank you. And I just want to clarify that that question was not asked with any spirit of editorializing or judgment.
No.
It is such a complicated landscape, and I'm always trying to understand, like, what is each player, can they do, and what do they want to do? And so that's the spirit of which that was asked.
I think our next slide is one of the ones that we did not include in our original. And this was a suggestion from Deborah Palmquist.
Yeah.
So you're describing it perfectly. The parable of the blindfolded men and the elephant, and what are they think the elephant is, and each, depending upon where they're touching that system, they identify it as something different. So for Heading Home Ramsey, it's comparable. And I think when she suggested this, we were like, oh, we're not sure this is going to be, but with much encouragement from a variety of people that this actually does describe it. Understanding Heading Home Ramsey may be different depending on what point you are entering at, what your need is, what you are prepared to contribute, how you are prepared to partner. So each aspect of the work that we do is included in the entirety of Heading Home Ramsey, but extremely difficult to understand and to explain. So this was kind of our effort at, if you're confused, totally understandable under the circumstances.
Well, I think we continue to engage your organization and other organizations that are doing this work. And one large piece of it is so that we understand and we can be ambassadors for you when we're sitting on different rail commissions or different, you know, other entities where we can also be somebody describing that elephant too. So I think, we're going to continue to ask, and we're going to continue to try to get the full picture, because I believe, at least for me, last year when we were talking about this, I was trying to understand the difference between outside in and heading home. Mm-hmm. And so continue to have these conversations, these things become more clear, and so I appreciate it. I think Mr. Busuri had a question.
I know you showed a slide of all the partners. How does your street outreach look like, and how does that work? Is it one organization that does it, or many organizations do the street outreach work?
Lonnie, you want to respond to that?
Sure. Yeah, I can answer that. There's many organizations that do the street outreach work, and they're all funded by different state agencies for that. So, and they all come to the table. We have specifically, like through Lutheran Social Services, the StreetWorks Collaborative, and they target youth ages 16 to 24. Mm-hmm. And then, like through the Project for Assistance in Transition from Homelessness grant, PATH, for example, People Inc., no, I think it's now Radius Health has that grant. People Inc. is also funded to do street outreach. So there's multiple funding sources for that.
Because the reason why I ask is when I was an ambassador for the city, there was, with the Metro Police, there was a social worker that was with them.
Uh-huh. That's
would
the HAP.
Yes. So that would go and talk to the youth that they pick up, because it was nuisance, right? So they're just loitering and they're hanging out in downtown in the Skyway. So is this part of that program?
It is. Okay. I mean, we work with, you know, Metro Transit. Lucy mm-hmm. was describing our work with the police force. And I think we do help them to understand the need. That's a role that we have, you know, in the continuum is the partners work together to try and respond to the family's needs, the needs of single adults, the needs of youth, mm-hmm. and then various organizations will be provided with funding either from the state or the federal government that comes through Heading Home Ramsey. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we are very involved with outreach at all levels.
Well, it's good to put a picture to the program itself.
Yes.
So, it was amazing seeing a police officer pull up downtown, and a youth worker jump out of the car and talk to the kids before the officer talked to them. So I really am supportive of that.
Outreach is a key aspect of this work. And, again, I think it's something very much like prevention where people aren't always maybe connecting the dots because it's not a specific housing provider. But it has to do with the total continuum. Yeah.
To the point earlier.
Yes, exactly.
Prevention and outreach.
Exactly.
Ms. Prince.
Exactly.
And maybe I shouldn't get really specific yet, but when it comes to homeless veterans, we do, I know that the city made a goal of ensuring, some years back, ensuring that all veterans were housed. And it's my understanding that PHA has veterans vouchers and that there may be more options for that particular population. Is that the case that we're able to, when we find veterans who are homeless, we're able to provide pretty instantaneous support to them?
I can answer that question probably.
That's your area.
Thank you for asking a question about working with veterans. Obviously, that's my passion. We actually right now have a governor who's a veteran, and he has declared that he would like to see the state become one of the fifth state to end veteran homelessness throughout the state. Our work is very collaborative, and it works with the state, the federal government, and you're referring to PHA as a partner. So the Fed holds vouchers. They're called HUD-VASH vouchers, and some veterans are eligible for those vouchers. Others are not. So we do work with the continuum partners as part of coordinated entry and other systems, housing supports, a whole variety of outreach and engagement. But yes, veterans do actually, they might show us how we can work with chronically homeless population to try and effectively end homelessness for these most difficult to serve populations. So we're learning a lot that we hope will translate to the larger populations in the community.
Okay, great. Okay, so next we're going to talk about how the work is funded. Through Heading Home Ramsey, we have a lot of different funding sources. We had the HUD Emergency Solution Grant, the DHS Housing Supports, POLAC Family Foundation Funds, Minnesota Housing and Housing Trust Fund, the Minnesota Housing Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, the HUD dollars through the Continuum of Care, and other federal, state, city, and philanthropic funds. For Minnesota Housing, or what we call the FHPAP, we get approximately $3.2 million over 2 years to help fund our efforts. For the HUD Continuum of Care, we get approximately $7 million. So you're looking at $10 million in terms of state and federal efforts. And then we have the city's efforts through the HUD grant of approximately $566,000 a year. So those are the dollars that are on the table that's actually given to the different providers, organizations in order to help fund. And, you know, and not listed as a part on this, but, you know, we do have great public interest in ending homeless. So when we say the other funds through other sources, you know, we have great supporters from foundations, individuals who want to help in ending homelessness.
And before you move on, I'm curious, on the page where you showed collaboration of organizations, I saw City of St. Paul. Are other cities in Ramsey County's contributors, or is it just St. Paul?
Well, you mean other cities?
Contributing funding.
No. So here's how it works. Each county, through HUD mandate, they're actually mandated to, you know, they apply for funds just like Ramsey County does, and they are given funds in order to administer. And we all had to come under the cover of doing, like, the coordinated entry aspect. Every county across the country had to implement the coordinated entry aspect. So, you know, we kind of stay in our own little county reserves. However, when you talk about bringing all the groups together from Minnesota, there is talk and conversations going on what different counties or different regions are doing in order to help the entire state of Minnesota.
I would comment, the answer is no. Other municipalities in Ramsey County are not specifically contributing. One comment, though, to make that I would point out as a note of encouragement, there is a suburban Heading Home Ramsey, which is a group of people that work in the more suburban areas of Ramsey County and try and work in collaboration and partnership. I don't want to represent that there aren't efforts, because there are, and I think that they've been very successful in pulling together partnership and working in collaboration. Funds, no. Yeah.
I knew the answer. I just got it.
Okay. Is that a trick question?
Mr. Tallon and Ms. Nathan.
Thank you. I'm just curious about that, Roseville, Maplewood. What are some reasons why they wouldn't be a part of this?
Well, I wouldn't. There are a lot of organizations that are based in those suburban areas, so they are participating. So, not to suggest that they aren't members of Heading Home Ramsey, the urban version of Heading Home Ramsey, they are. So, and not having to do with their geographic area or location of their home base, having more to do with the work that they do, which is throughout the county. Mm-hmm. So, but I think the question was about contributions from the municipalities
to Ramsey County,
to Heading Home, and no.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ms. Baker.
So two questions. My understanding is the city's contribution is our emergency solutions grant from HUD. Do other cities get an emergency solutions grant from HUD?
No, mm-hmm. Not that I'm aware of, no. The ESG is a specific allocation from HUD to St. Paul, so that's why you guys have that grant.
So not other Roseville and others would not get that?
No.
Okay. And then what is the total, I think I heard you say it, and I was trying to add up the 2 years over 1 year over, but how much total budget does Heading Home Ramsey have to allocate in a given year? Or two-year cycle, if that's easier.
Federally, we have about $6.9 million. That we allocate to different providers, service providers.
Every year?
Yes. Then the other piece is for state funding, which I said the 3.2 over 2 years is through, it's through other state efforts that go to maybe some of the same providers and some different, but it's more statewide.
So it's about $8.5 million a year to allocate.
One comment on that would be that I think that there are a lot of the agencies and the funding requires for the federal funding and the state funding some matching dollars. So they are obtaining funds from other sources. And oftentimes the importance of the funds is not only the work that it will provide for, but also that, the matching necessary is provided for, and it's complicated, extremely complicated. But just to say that these aren't the only two sources of funding that the organizations that are part of Heading Home Ramsey depend upon. Yeah. Okay. So
some of the responsibilities for Heading Home Ramsey is that we operate and that we plan for the continuum of care. We as a board, we establish the priorities for funding for projects. Projects have to complete applications in order to be considered for funding, and they are actually, have to complete applications, and then we look at the work that they're going to be doing, make sure that it aligns with the direction that we want to go or that the direction that we need to go, and that's how we make determination on funding. We also try to implement and monitor the coordinated entry process and the assessment process. That's a big piece of getting individuals and families in through the system so that we can actually identify the intensity of the work that we need to do. We also, as a board, we evaluate the outcomes of the funded projects. You know, I think I said earlier, you know, it's just not that you get funds, but we have different things that we assess each group on that they have to meet criteria on. And all of that comes into play as to how, say, HUD or the state will award the funding. You know, if you have poor performers and you're constantly, you know, funding them, it hurts the amount of dollars that we get from HUD. So we try to make sure that we monitor, provide assistance where it's needed for many of the providers. I mean, you know, because it's not easy work, and it's not easy work to, I want to say, do all of the reporting requirements. So we try to be that support system for them. If nothing else, it's just from each other. You know, I get a little, you know, it may seem like it's competitive, but as I said in the beginning, that I think everybody at the table is really at the table to make sure that the work is done. And so wherever we can kind of bring up support for groups that need help, we try to make sure that we supply it and just not that critical voice and checking the box and say, no, you don't get it. Because if they have a good project that we need to address, say, a certain segment, population, we try to make sure that we give them the support they need in order to be successful. And we all work together to prevent homelessness for the continuum.
Ms. Aker.
Thank you. So given that I assume a number of the projects that get funded or organizations that get funded are also part of Heading Home Ramsey, how do you do that decision about allocation and also the evaluation? Is that Are those decisions made separately? Yeah. Otherwise, obviously.
Yeah, I'll let some conflicts answer that.
Yeah. So that's kind of where my role comes in as the continuum of care coordinator. I'm part of helping to plan and operate with the partners, but then also we look at every year we have what's called a NOFA process. So that's the Notice of Funding Availability from HUD. And so then I convene a ranking committee, and it has to be made up of people who are not funded by the continuum of care. And then together we get what's called these annual progress reports. There's a whole evaluation that's done, a ranking system, a scoring. There's back and forth with the projects and looking at did you meet your specific outcomes that we do. And then at the end, it all gets wrapped up and written into HUD as what's called a collaborative application. So each project does their own that gets reviewed by HUD, but then I'm also tasked with writing the full application on behalf of Heading Home Ramsey and submitting that. And that would just be for our HUD funds. We do a similar process then with the state FHPAP, Family Homeless and Prevention and Assistance Program dollars, where, again, we convene what we call a ranking committee that helps and works with Ramsey County to then review and score all of these projects. And we look at, again, how did they perform the last year, if they were currently funded, if they're new funded, how are they going to meet the requirements that are set out by the funders and what they write in their proposals. So it is competitive, and I do think it's fair because we're looking at all those different aspects. Both require ongoing what we call monitoring or site visits, and that we then have a form that we have to create and report back to the funders and ensuring that we're doing that.
And I would make one comment, and that is that, you know, a lot of the charge is to be continuously in touch with what the continuum needs and what we think will improve the continuum. And so the ranking committee is often tasked with very difficult decisions that have to do with planning and looking out to the future, to the needs of the community, and funding existing projects who are good partners and have done good work. And so it can be a very, very challenging process, but it's absolutely essential to having the continuum stay dynamic enough to continue to respond to the needs of the community.
Mr. Dow.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question with that would be, what are some trends in the work that you're doing and working with those organizations? What's working, what's not?
I would say in terms of the whole funding aspect, is that
the organization that you're working with, that mm-hmm. you're measuring their outcomes?
You know, I would say in terms of, you know, sometimes I'm speaking as a provider myself, you know, we go through the coordinated entry process and I may have referrals, say, into my specific program that I feel are really a challenge. And I'm looking at the things that I'm going to be measured up against and the challenges that I face in actually, say, getting housing for people or the intense financial need of some of the people that, you know, we need to serve, or maybe even some of the barriers that they are really faced with. And I call coordinated entry back and I said, are you serious? Are you setting me up, you know, are you sending me all the hard clients? Well, no, every client is, you know, what I think we're seeing now is a challenge. So where I may feel like I'm being rated and assessed on how I have families advance their income, everyone else is being faced with that same challenge, you know. But it's the nature of society. It's the nature of affordable housing. You know, I would really be, less than honest to say that for almost everyone that walks through the door, it's a challenge, and it's a financial challenge. And so when you look at every other organization that I want to say when you come to making funding decisions that you're in competition with, you know, I actually know that they're being faced with some of the same challenges. And so, but the whole issue is that we have people that we need to serve. And my point of view is whatever it's going to take, if it means I'm going to have to work harder for other dollars, then I have to work harder for other dollars in order to be able to supply the need for the people that we try to place into homes. You know, so I guess in terms of competition, it is very competitive, and there's never enough dollars for the issue. But it's the same issue for I'll guarantee you for every provider where it seems like there's not enough dollars in order to address the issues or the complexity of the issues for some of the families that we serve.
Ms. Prince, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, it's a comment as opposed to a question. This is the thing about all of our homeless efforts, is that the underlying problems are it's a supply issue, it's an affordability issue, it's poverty, it's chemical dependency, it's untreated mental illness, joblessness. I mean, I feel like it's great that we're here and we're having this conversation, but the larger issue obviously are the root causes that are not being able to be adequately funded and paid for. And so I just wonder what we all need to do to step back and put together, whether it's, I mean, I can't, it's an impossible, it's a really intractable problem, and I really appreciate what you're talking about here. And I think about, Lucy, the great work that you're doing at Teresa Living Center. And if you get someone who has needs that far exceed what you're able to serve, I just don't. Anyway, I just realize this is a really tough problem, mm-hmm. and that we've got to figure out kind of how to get at the root causes at the same time that we're solving this problem.
Mm-hmm. I know that the fourth item on your list was to talk about what St. Paul can do. So I want to kind of thread the needle here in terms of letting you get through what you want to say, and then also to make sure that we do talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I see looking forward a little bit that we are getting to that. And because that's what we're always looking for, is like, what can we do?
Okay. Yes. We have a lot of those. Yeah. We have a couple.
Right. I noted, and I think it's noted. And the other thing that just it's been occurring to me as we've been having this conversation is how much Heading Home, Ramsey County, is like the Workforce Innovation Board. In terms of, like, I'm sure maybe that's abundantly clear to everybody here, but all of a sudden I'm like, I get it. I understand, like, how what your organization is doing and how you have the complications of the requirements of federal dollars versus state dollars, and you can only use these for that. And some of them are go straight out of Ramsey County. Some of them go through partners. And so when you say complexity, all of a sudden, Mr. Tolbert and I have both served on WIB, and I was like, I think this is WIB. He's like, yep. But so now, like, for some reason, it just crystallized to me, like, why how those two entities are very similar in terms of the functioning piece of it. So I had an epiphany. So that's check.
Yeah,
took care of that. So anyway, we'll answer to the extent that you want to, but if you want to try to continue to move forward on your slides, that works as well.
Do you have a comment?
Yeah, there was a comment, but I think you kind of just, like, stated it, but just, yes, that, again, we're not, like, Heading Home Ramsey isn't an organization. It's not, like, a 501c3. It is a collaboration. So, literally, the staff of Heading Home Ramsey would be myself as the Continuum of Care Coordinator, and then we do also have another position that's funded out of our HUD grant, and that is for another planner and evaluator for the Continuum of Care, and that position just has been vacant since September. So, we're working on it. We're hoping to have that hired, since that's another seat that would be sitting with me at Ramsey County. And so, again, everybody who's coming to the table, whether they're coming to the full Heading Home Ramsey or one of our many subcommittees, it's all volunteer. It's time that they're taking away from doing this work to make sure their voices are heard and that we are working together to create these solutions and to implement a plan. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So on this slide, this is kind of just looking at some brief data set points. So, again, I think to the earlier question about how are we looking at trends and evaluating, like, we use all of that. So the two charts we're looking at is the one on the left is the January 2018 point in time count. So HUD mandates that every January we're required to do what's called like a static point in time count, where we talk to the emergency shelters, transitional housing, and then we do a count of everyone that is unsheltered. And so you can see in January of last year, the total number of persons that we counted would have been 1,424 between emergency shelter, transitional housing, and then those who reported as being unsheltered. Wilder then does also their survey every 3 years in October, and they look at the similar kind of set of emergency shelters, which includes domestic violence for HUD, transitional housing. They then call out rapid rehousing, which we normally wouldn't consider as being homeless. And then they also look at the unsheltered. And so in October, this last October, their total number of people experiencing homelessness is 1,927. And so the different things I would say about the snapshots is that, again, it's just a snapshot. Part of, I would say, the challenge of using these data points as just making a case for homelessness and how much homelessness does an area have is that it's also based on who do you find that night and who are in those beds. There's a lot of other variables. Weather plays a factor. I would say last year during the Super Bowl, that played a factor with the stronger police presence downtown. It was harder to count. I was out there with them, with the outreach workers, trying to find people riding the trains. And so one of the other ways that we try to track our data in looking at the trends would be what's called HUD has the system performance measures, and that's where we're looking at outcomes such as a continuum, how long are our shelter stays? We are seeing our shelter stays are increasing right now, partly because of the housing stock. Other pieces that we're seeing as trends would be that people who do get vouchers, whether it's through the rapid rehousing programs or if they get one from the St. Paul PHA, for example, they're taking longer. We track, you know, from referral date, from voucher to actual lease move-in date, much longer. Lower vacancy rate can contribute to that. We have landlords that don't work with people with barriers or backgrounds, such as criminal, evictions, rent, all of that plays into it. So those are just some of those like trends and data that we're looking at as a continuum. And so specifically, not again, not just who's HUD funded, but who's in Ramsey County and providing these services.
Okay, so now just in talking about then...
Okay, Mr. Tao had a question.
Okay.
Sir, I have a question. Are these data, are these duplicated or unduplicated record?
These would be unduplicated. Yeah. Yes. And then we will actually have, I forgot to mention, our new this January 2019 point in time count data. It'll be ready at the end of this month.
So now Lonnie touched on a little bit, and you asked what can the City of St. Paul do in order to help support the work. And one of the biggest issues is affordable housing. In 2015, the income limit for affordable housing is like 80% of an area median income, or $65,800 for a family of four. And I think for the City of St. Paul, we just passed a minimum wage law where we want 15. No, we didn't. Okay.
No, we did.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Okay,
well,
15.
We better have. We just recognize that it's a minimum wage is not what
enough.
We
yes. Yes. Because at $15 an hour, you're looking at $31,200 annually, or that's 40% of that, 47% of that affordable limit. So lack of affordable housing, it stresses the homelessness response continuum because we have very few families, and I could say even for the $15 an hour, that come to the table, especially I serve single-parent families, with $15 an hour as their wages. And so, Councilwoman Prince, when you said, like, you know, it seems so overwhelming, it's like for everything I think the city does, we can't stop doing it. You know, because some of the things that impact the $15 an hour is... you know, we may have a low graduation rate or things like that. So we have to stay in the public schools and make sure that even at the point where children are and families are experiencing homelessness, I applaud St. Paul Public Schools for keeping that eye on them and keeping them in school, because that's one of the influencers for them making a living wage. The coordinated entry priority list, it's extremely long. Meaning that they've come into the system expressing a need for housing, and housing is not guaranteed, and there's not enough supportive housing that can even be afforded. So targeting the hardest to serve, many families are ineligible for housing due to different barriers, and it could be anything from they may have previous evictions. So when we talked about the work that SMRLs do and everyone does in order to try to, even when I look at my families, I try to make sure that they don't leave the system where they are having evictions or unlawful detainers on their record, because I know it's going to impact them in the future. So as a part of the work that SMRLs does and other city efforts to make sure that you're there at the point when the landlord gets ready to file an eviction, that you try to mediate to make sure it doesn't happen, because you're really affecting a family's life for life at that point. Also, any criminal history is a big barrier for housing. Mental health issues and disabilities, poor credit, low income, and large families are a big issue, and it's a stressor on the system, but it's something that I think as providers that we're committed to trying to address.
And I, at the risk of I'm becoming a caricature of myself on this topic. On the previous slide, I noted that it's almost an equal number of St. Paul and suburban residents who are new households earning or paying up to 30% of their income on housing. Mm-hmm. That it seems like every time I turn around, the suburban Ramsey County has more affordable senior living properties going up. But when I look at the need, because folks end up in St. Paul looking for help, doesn't mean that that's actually even where they want to be living, mm-hmm. Where they are. And I just want to reiterate that this is a regional issue and an issue where the mm-hmm. suburbs need to come to the table as well. Mm-hmm. I think that we are very committed to our role here, and I think we do a good job. We need to always push ourselves to do more. But when I look at the numbers, there's something missing.
Yes, we agree with you. And, you know, some of the efforts that you've done, the Affordable Housing Incentive Program, for example, just really outstanding and exactly the type of thing that we would like to see replicated around the county and all of the communities. So point taken, absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess I'm pointing that out because I think as Heading Home Ramsey County, you're in a position to be able to help put that pressure on our suburban partners. And also, I think we're in a position to share what we've learned in our work here with other municipalities. They don't need to reinvent the wheel. I think there's a lot of things we've tried that didn't work and a lot of things we've tried that have worked.
Yeah.
Mr. Tolbert and then Ms. Nacker.
Does Ramsey County have any affordable housing goals in policy?
I can't speak to the specifics of Ramsey County's actual affordable housing policy, to be honest with you. I don't
know.
Would
be best to ask that question to
Brian O'Connor.
Yeah, or anyone in the policy and planning unit, they worked on that plan. They came and presented to us, so they were putting some in, but yeah, I don't have that number.
I know it's part of the comprehensive plan. They have an absolute target number, but I think that's kind of out further than you're talking about. You're talking about in the immediate time frame, so I'm not sure of that.
But do you know if they have, whenever they get involved with any project or anything like that, do their values reflect like a 20% affordable
housing
goal?
I honestly can't speak to that. That is a Ramsey County, Big R Ramsey County policy. Be happy to check and get back to you. Holly's writing that question down for us. That would be great. I just wanted to say, you know, as an opportunity for us to have a dialogue, I really appreciate your comments. And I think it spotlights for us an area where we can work harder, which is to outreach to the suburban municipalities more effectively. As part of our outreach and engagement committee, we have done some listserv type of outreach communications, but we have not had a thoughtful discussion. And I think that in this particular day and age, this is absolutely warranted. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Ms. Nacker and then Mr. Tao.
Thank you. I just wanted to go back to the point you made about and I know we all know this, but I heard a statistic, I think, at Outside In that was just really shocking to me about the number of people waiting for housing in the coordinated entry system compared to the number of units available. And I thought it was something like 1,300 folks waiting and 7 available units as of like last quarter. And so
yeah, over
1,307.
Yeah.
And so that obviously is just heartbreaking on a lot of levels, but one of them is just, you know, you have a system called coordinated entry that you want, that took a lot of work, that takes a lot of work, that you want people to believe in. But if you enter, you know, we're telling people to enter the system and it's enter the system and wait for, I don't know what the average amount of time is, but with that backlog, I mean, it then also seems like it calls into question or weakens the whole concept of the system. So I'm echoing what you're saying in terms of the need for the housing, but it's just the scale is really mind-blowing.
Let me just comment on that quickly, if I may. The coordinated entry system, that is assessing people, families, individuals, and youth for their specific needs and attempting to identify and match them to appropriate housing settings, is a best practice identified by HUD nationwide, which is why it eventually came down as a requirement to continuums of care to implement. So we've done that, both with families, singles, and youth. I think what we have learned and what is being learned around the country is that it is not answering the need. And specifically, you just called out very specifically the manner in which it does not address the need. Because people are on these lists. There's little hope if you're number 990 that you're going to have a unit if the number of units is not even equal to the number of people on the list in any way, shape, or form. Right now there's a push to start what they're calling dynamic prioritization, and under any other name it might be, which is actually to do a more effective job of identifying what Lucy was describing. When there is a match present, when that person is there and ready to be housed, when you can identify who on the list is not able to be housed at this point, can we make an exception to try and house people more quickly? So I think it's taken some time for them to come around to that on a national level, but they have come around to that. I was at a recent conference where this was something that was talked about in a couple of different workshop settings. So I think there will be adaptations to the coordinated entry system. There absolutely must be. In order for it not to feel like it's just a punitive exercise mm-hmm. that is not actually serving any real purpose. So we hear you. Housing providers would probably, they have that frustration.
And I would just comment that before coordinated entry, we didn't even know what the need was mm-hmm. or what our housing stock was. And so I think this is great data that, again, it shows there's a huge need. So it's very unfortunate that we have to go through this process to get on a list. But then it shows we need more everything, rapid rehousing, permanent supportive housing. We need more landlords at the table. That's what this shows. I think the big thing to remember with coordinated entry, it was never supposed to be this magical gateway to housing. It did not create new housing stock. It was supposed to give us the data and to ensure that people who had the most needs, were most vulnerable and at risk, were getting prioritized to be moved into housing. And I think that is the ideal that we're trying to work for. And I would say the other piece of that puzzle is, I think it was called out that this was a HUD mandate. It's also only a partial state mandate. Only certain state programs are required to use coordinated entry. So then we already have other programs that aren't required to go through coordinated entry. So it's that also then contributes to the overall system of not being able to be as effective as it could be. So definitely another ask that I'm always saying is that, again, we need more and more to work with coordinated entry, and we do need to definitely step up on that dynamic prioritization where we're making sure that we're working with people as soon as possible. And for those that we just know aren't going to get housing through our system, what are those other options? Where are those mainstream resources? And ensuring our assessors and navigators know all of those resources to work with these families and singles.
Mr. Tell?
Thank you. I guess, so, you know, our work on the Twin City Land Bank and the Family Housing Fund, so we, you know, some of our council members, we sit on that, and it was always been a challenge to get the municipal outside the suburb to do more affordable housing. I think what I would like to see more is that the Heading Home Ramsey be a stronger advocate in working with the county so that they can increase the funding stream for the city of St. Paul to create more affordable housing. If we look at the data here, it's, you know, we do more than our number here is greater, right? But we also pay more taxes, and we also provide jobs for the surrounding residents in the suburb in Ramsey County. Mm-hmm. And so I think there needs to be a parallel track here where the coalition mm-hmm. is doing the everyday work of providing housing and ending homelessness. But I think there needs to be a political track that we need to bring more resources so that it's equitable. Because if you look at this, if you the fact is most of the homeless folks are people of color. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the suburb, there's not a lot of people mm-hmm. of color in the suburb. So it might not be a priority to them, but it is a priority to us. And the poverty and the homelessness in St. Paul has a ripple effect into the suburban area. And so I think that it makes sense for the county and the collaborations to advocate whether it's a new funding source or whatnot so that we can continue to leverage where our affordable housing partners, PPL, private developers, so that they can continue to create more affordable housing in St. Mm-hmm. Paul, which address some of the issue and the trend that you talked about earlier, Lucy, about mm-hmm. Incomes and just a lack of more affordable mm-hmm. housing. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see that, and I, you know, any thoughts on that would be very helpful.
Boy, we would definitely like to see that as well, and I think that this is where I think partnership comes in, because we do need leaders. We do need to, in order to actually accomplish that type of change, we need the support of leadership to move those efforts forward. We can be behind it with all of the information that supports the need and helps them to understand. But I think this is part of, like, our challenge, is that we are dependent upon leaders to move some of these larger issues forward. We absolutely, 100%, and thank you for your input on that, agree that we should be the advocate for that, those efforts, that we should be working on those efforts. But I think we really need leadership to be with us on that journey and as part of those efforts, because that's where those big decisions that can really impact how housing is developed and designed and what how the need is anticipated, that's where they oftentimes occur. Chime in anywhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that, though. I appreciate it.
Okay. So, and one of the other big needs, and I think we have an outreach and engagement committee that are actually trying to do landlord engagement with, you know, along that line. And since 2016, the number of rental households has begun to outnumber the number of homeowners. And so we need more supportive housing projects that require negotiation with private landlords to house individuals and families. And also because the vacancy rate had been fluctuating between 2% and 4% since 2012. But, you know, all of that is such a it has such an impact on the work that we do, that that landlord engagement piece, you know, even as a far as a part of, I want to say, the continuum and the different providers, we've made agreements that where we want to be able to go to landlords kind of holistically and say, we have program participants that need housing, and we are going to try to really ease your load in terms of what you need to do as a landlord. So we've come up with things that, as providers, we're going to say we're going to do for our participants. We're going to do landlord-tenant relationships kind of work with our participants so that the landlords aren't hesitant to say, you know, I don't know if I want to take a homeless family or if I want to take someone who they're not paying a certain percentage of their income, because landlords have a lot of things going on in their mind, or if they feel like it's going to be an issue. You know, what I hear a lot is that landlords sometimes, you know, as a program provider, they can trust that I'm going to do the intense work that I need to do with my participants, but they may say, what are you going to do about their friends? You know, that's an issue. And so, you know, what we've done is we kind of crafted it into how we talk with our participants about their housing opportunities and their relationship with landlords. And, you know, I will kind of really go face-to-face even with the participants and say, you know, I want you to be able to provide housing for you and your children and your and the families, but also I want you to leave it so that the landlord is not hesitant in any way with providing housing from any other providers that come to them looking for housing for families. So we've kind of tried to get on the same page with how we're going to present ourselves to landlords. And a lot of it is through the outreach and engagement that we're trying to do to bring everyone to the table, but also try to guarantee that what we're saying we want to do in order to keep them engaged, that we stick to our word as well.
And we've had quite a few discussions about, you know, like, for example, with the use of Section 8 vouchers, a landlord has to get an inspection from not only the City of St. Paul but also by the PHA. Mm-hmm. So when there's a 2 to 4% or 2% vacancy rate, why? Mm-hmm. Why? Yes. So what can we do? And we're asking questions on that end. Like, mm-hmm. if you get one, could we skip the other one as an incentive? Mm-hmm. Or is there some way that we can combine them? And other questions, too, about speeding up the Section 8 negotiation process, or if you find a place outside of an area where you're qualified, can you just use it instead of have to go through that process? So it is, but there are these little built-in barriers that until you start looking and really having those conversations, with it being such a low vacancy rate, there's still very, very few incentives for landlords to accept those higher barrier residents, renters. So
yes, that's true.
Yep.
Yeah. I think one thing I learned recently as part of the conference that I attend in California, The PHAs appear to have more flexibility than I understood them to have in making decisions about their processes based on things that they were able to accomplish around the nation, working in partnership with local government, with other providers. So I appreciate your work on that. And again, I think this is the point where where leaders are together in the room. They can talk through these specifics, and hopefully we can support any effort in that direction.
I think the other thing that we learned was that the scattered site housing in the city of St. Paul is tremendous. There are houses all over the city that are owned by the PHA.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
And in some ways, that's a different program, and I think they have more challenges funding and maintaining that program because the Section 8 vouchers have more of a bipartisan support because it's free market.
Yes.
When we looked at a map of where those houses are located, it is incredibly fairly distributed across the city and gives people an opportunity to really live in a home and be a part of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so that program, I think, is always in jeopardy of budget cutting and something that I think is worth working on preserving as well, because then obviously all those barriers go away. It's a PHA that's just doing the property maintenance and its own inspections. It's keeping up with its own requirements. So
they have been a good partner for Heading Home Ramsey, and they are among the applicants. So we work with them. And it's great that you mentioned the scattered site because I was educated on that point, did not understand that point, and that viewed them less as the provider of housing and more of the funder or partner in funding. So, yeah, I think all angles have to be explored. Are we done with this?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So some of the other support that we need, I think, from the city of St. Paul is that we do have a tremendous lack of shelter. People are regularly forced to sleep in places that are not meant for habitation due to the lack of shelter beds, and especially when you're thinking about shelter beds for families. The lack of shelter beds for families. It's really, I think, our family shelter system consists of 105 beds.
It's beds.
Beds. And
when you say our, what do you mean?
Ramsey County.
Ramsey County. System.
Yes.
And that's not including, so what do you, with Teresa Living, you include those
in the
numbers?
We're not a shelter. We're transitional housing.
So that wouldn't be included.
Right, okay. Right. Actually, our resource is through the Family Service Center and the Family Place.
So you're really specifically talking about shelter beds.
Shelter beds. Yes, there is a, and some people tend to argue that they don't want shelter to be kind of like a system drain. But when you have families that are being evicted, actually living in places that it's not meant for human habitation, that number it definitely outnumbers the number of beds that we have available. So, they don't want, I think, families to look at it as a resource, but something really has to be done because there's not enough shelter beds for families in the system.
Well, and there's a steep cost for housing people in places that are not meant for human habitation.
Exactly.
Well.
Exactly.
Ms. Prince has a question, and then Ms. Anker.
And that 105 bed includes Project Home. Is that
yes?
Right?
Mm-hmm. So that's the family. Yeah, family place. Yeah.
So when you become aware, because some of us among you have been meeting about family homelessness in our St. Paul schools. And Anne, I believe when I reached out to Superintendent Gothard about 2 months ago, I think he said it was about 1,500 families at this point.
Yeah, at that point, it was about 1,500. So every year, we identify about 2,000 families, about 2,000 children that are attending St. Paul schools that are experiencing homelessness. And what we've really found is that very, very few of them are actually getting into shelter or getting into any kind of supportive housing. Most of our students that are identified are actually doubled up. About 65% are doubled up every year. And that's because they have
you know, they have to rely on other people because they don't have services within the shelter system or supportive housing system. Mm-hmm.
And doubled up by that they're staying with families or mm-hmm. couch mm-hmm. surfing or... okay. And then there's the other issue of those who are not reporting that they're homeless. Mm-hmm. And then this morning I was listening to public radio and foster children who age out of foster care are often homeless. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that would include those students. Mm-hmm. Who would be counted in that number if they report, but they probably
don't report.
So what happens? Because I just want to be clear about if a family contacts Ramsey County being homeless, what is the next step? How are they put into the continuum?
Yeah.
Do you
want to
answer it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was gonna say if they're contacting the family shelter team for an intake, yeah, there's an assessment that's done with them for eligibility, and then the Ramsey County Shelter Team has like three levels of priority that they use for getting people into the family shelter, and so then yes, they're waitlisted, and so every month we get a stat report from our family shelters that just mm-hmm. explains. How many families are on the wait list, and what's the average length of time that they're on that wait list before maybe getting into shelter? And so, like for February, it was they're waiting an average of 45 days at that point. I think we had 41 families on the wait list. And through April 15th, like October 15th to April 15th, then they do expand, not shelter, but they use the cold weather motel program. And those that have third-party verification of being unsheltered, so being, you know, on the trains and their cars, staying in other places not meant for human habitation, could then get the motel placement until an opening is available in the family shelter.
And that is only during cold weather?
That is the motel, correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is set to end on April 15th, but it will not end. So they're not putting people out immediately. But it does end at the same time the cold weather rule goes off.
Ms. Anker.
So in the panoply of all the different parts of this problem, it is such a huge problem, and I don't believe in passing the buck to another government entity, but there's so much there that we each sort of have to play our part, and I think when it comes to affordable housing, that's on us. You know, we need to be expanding the supply of housing yesterday, but shelter is truly the purview of the county. Mm-hmm. And I've had some incredibly awkward conversations with county officials about how the number of shelter beds is determined, because clearly the decision, say, to open the Maplewood shelter was made at some point, and now it is woefully inadequate for the number of people who are experiencing homelessness. We have more people in the world, we have more people in St. Paul, we have more people in Ramsey County, and we have a disproportionately larger number of people among them who are unsheltered and homeless. So do you have, I know the org chart is the last slide, but you know, to the point about like we see these problems, we agree with you, but we need leadership to step up. What's the point of contact between Heading Home Ramsey and Ramsey to say, we need more, what are you going to do about this?
We did do that. We presented to the Ramsey County Commissioners in October as well. And I think part of, too, some of this that's coming out is from that Metro-wide Unsheltered Design Team. I was a part of that as well. And so was I. And yeah, so is Maria. So there's a big move now. And so they're looking at not just the county, because the county, I think, yes, it's their responsibility to help with that. But again, kind of like the cities, they can't do it alone. They don't have enough funds to go around, I think, to meet all of these needs as well. So again, how can we all partner and collaborate on that? And I don't know, Maria, if you want to speak more to it.
I'd love to say a lot about that. and I understand exactly your point, mm-hmm. and I think that's a challenge that we have as a governing board as well, is attempting to provide thoughtful information about the need that is based on facts for decision makers. And once we've done that, the board itself does not have a tremendous amount of influence at this point in time, which I think maybe, again, points to the need for leaders to be engaged with the board in a different manner, perhaps in the future at some point, so that we can, I think, bring that information forward to a specific group and ask for a specific answer. As of right now, I don't think we have that direct path to, you know, that kind of relationship. And I think we're working on it, and I think Ramsey County is working on it. And I think to the point, again, that on May 8th, we will have a presentation that is an examination of our family shelter system out of the U of M. And I think we are hopeful. This is facilitated through the Resilient Communities Project in Ramsey County. And I think we are hopeful that they will hear from this group that has done a really solid assessment of our family shelter system and understand the need better, and hopefully be able to use that information effectively to respond to the needs in the system. I'm not sure that that's helpful, but just to say that I understand exactly what you're talking about. And I think I should say that Ramsey County does have efforts going on internally to try to, Councilmember Prince's point about people aging out of foster care, just as an example. They have convened an interdepartmental council, which is now looking at all of the points where Ramsey County systems and practices may be having an impact on the number of people that end up homeless coming out of Ramsey County facilities and programs. We are very, very focused on doing a better job of understanding how Ramsey County can be more effective as a partner and impact this problem.
I think that specifically the number 105 is what's
weird.
And it's listed as a way that the city of St. Paul could support. And the question is that this a Ramsey County responsibility? And Mr. Tolbert earlier was asking, like, what is Ramsey County's housing plan? And I think it'd be good to know what's the right number of beds. I mean, 105 with a growing population certainly isn't. We can tell. We all know that.
Yes.
So what is that number? And,
yes.
And maybe from the follow-up file we can get that information, because if it's 101, you know, we've got a real problem.
I mean,
we need to know what that number is and what, so that we are all, you know, echoing what Ms. Naker said. Mm-hmm. We have a plan, we're taking responsibility for the addition of affordable housing.
Yes.
I mean, it's our top priority, and money to go with it. So
sure.
We want to make sure that we're clear on how these other, on this complex matter, how these other goals are being met. Mm-hmm. Mr. Tolbert.
Yeah, well, I think we must be on the same wavelength today, because that was a question I had about the right number of beds. I think actually getting the actual number would be important.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to build if we know what we're trying to build. But to kind of get more in depth on that, my understanding is in homelessness, you differentiate into two different categories, family beds, and single adults.
And youth.
So three categories.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's kind of what I'm curious about, because I served on the former Mayor Coleman's task force for long-term homelessness that created Dorothy Day Higher Ground. And now I'm hearing that we don't have enough beds for any of these categories. Can you speak to, because, I mean, we did this, the largest public-private partnership in the history of the state of Minnesota to build that, and it's a great development. But if we don't have enough beds, and we just did that, how many more beds do we need? And all three of those categories is kind of the question. That
we have no youth beds in Ramsey County.
Well, what about Beacon on University Avenue?
Beacon Interplay.
Yeah. So that they may have two.
Are you talking about Beacon Collaborative?
Interfaith.
The
Prior Crossing.
Thank you.
Prior Crossing, yeah. They're not a shelter.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so they're housing.
Shelter
emergency shelter.
Mm-hmm. I think it really does go back to the same thing that you were talking about. We need a number. And to your point about, you know, we've just done this development and we still aren't meeting that need in the community for single adults we're referring to. I think that they can easily say that great strides have been made in that area and a huge improvement has been accomplished in the area of single shelter relative to what Dorothy Day was able to provide and what Higher Ground now is able to provide. Additionally, I think that they're really working hard at the continuum of, like, how can we support people who are homeless in achieving housing eventually.
Yeah.
Your question is a good one, though. So I think we need to get to, like, what is the number?
But, you know, when you have to be so forward-thinking on getting at those numbers, because I think about when we implemented the coordinated entry process for youth and singles, the Higher Ground Project, it was already in the process, you know, and we really didn't have – we had numbers – but we really didn't have real hard fact numbers because I think we didn't implement the coordinated entry for youth and singles until like
2016,
you know. And so that project was already on the table, you know. So I think, you know, as a city and a county, we just really have to be kind of forward thinking in our projection on shelter availability. Because you're right, there's not enough shelter. It's a new project, you know, and it's like we just got done with it, and now you're saying it's not enough. Well,
so maybe just for some clarification, so I can understand. And the homeless,
Chris, I'm sorry, Mr. Tolbert, when you got in here a little bit late, these mics are not picking up unless if you can pull yours a little.
Mine's not on.
Oh,
yay!
That is.
He wants to hear me talk. It's all right. Can you hear me now?
We're saying these old council ones are like direct.
I was sitting like, damn.
Yes.
So there's three categories that in the homeless arena you use teen, child, single adults, and
families.
Mm-hmm. And then there's two categories of emergency shelter and there's transitional housing. Those are
impermanent housing.
Impermanent housing. Mm-hmm. So there's three categories.
There's more.
Yeah.
What are the other ones?
Well,
you could say permanent supportive housing.
Yes, permanent supportive housing, transitional housing.
And then just plain permanent housing.
Plain permanent housing.
So do we have all the numbers of all those categories in beds in Ramsey County?
Units.
So when you say, when we're talking housing units, yeah, we do. But are you talking shelter?
I'm talking all three categories of all. Okay. They're all three categories of types of users as well as the categories of
Lonnie
where they are on the transition.
I don't have the far away.
I'm not saying you have to have them here, but I'm just curious if you have them.
Yes, we do a housing inventory count or a HIC count every year, and so we're actually just finishing that up. We'll have those numbers for May.
Is it possible to get those numbers,
yes,
get the actual need today of what we actually would need in those numbers of all those categories, and if possible, and this would be the hardest number, is the trajectory of what we believe we'll need? Because I think, I mean, we all want to do something. This is a time for us. This is a unique time, and I think in St. Paul, Minnesota, and probably across the country, in addressing affordable housing and homelessness, where there's appetite at the local level, hopefully at the county level, I believe there is, and the state level. But we can't build if we just keep talking about it. We need to actually do projections and have some goals. And I wouldn't even know where to start. Like I said, I served on the Higher Ground. And I think a lot of us on that committee believe that by finishing that, which was a huge undertaking of dollars from city, municipal, state, and huge fundraising by our corporate citizens here, we thought that was kind of like, all right, we got that done. What's next? not that you're ever done, but in terms of focusing on the next issue. And we don't know what we need to focus on if we don't know the numbers that we need. And so that's kind of where I would like to see those numbers, and then maybe Ramsey County can step up and start meeting those in partnership with St. Paul and other cities around the community.
Mm-hmm. And I think just reinforcing what you're saying, we recognize that you are a consortium and you're working. We And in some ways, we have you in front of us, so we're asking you the questions. Yeah. That some of them should go directly to Ramsey County. But I think just reinforcing what Mr. Tolbert said, we're looking to you as experts. You're the folks doing the work on the ground. You know these things. And so if you, as a respected entity, says this is what we need, that helps us make the case. Mm-hmm. So to get that information to us in real concrete terms, it really helps us be your advocates as well.
Yes. Absolutely.
Ms. Naker.
And I would also just say, like, we know it can be done because we did it. We created the Winter Safe Space, which now has 64 beds downtown, in 4 months when we and the county sat down with a sense of urgency. We all found the money. Like, it is overwhelming when you look at the full numbers in every single category, but we can do it. We just need to do it. And I completely agree that having some tangible numbers would help us, and then having leadership on all ends.
Right. And I think, because when I saw the lack of safe beds for single female adults, and I put a star next to it because, like, that category concerns me so much after, you know, walking through some encampments and mm-hmm. And just stories I've heard, and my concern about the single female adults being very vulnerable, and folks that are not sheltered, what are they doing to get shelter? And it's yeah. very deeply concerning to me, especially as I said, going through the encampments, like noticing who we saw there and the conditions that they were in and what the protectors that they were with was mm-hmm. was very concerning to me. Yes. So I want to know that number particularly.
Okay. I think we can make a commitment to Great. Provide some solid numbers.
Great. And again, and because we want to support your work as well.
It makes me want to just make one other comment about information and data, and that the data sets that we use and the information we use will be valuable, and I think we'll be able to respond to what you're requesting. But there's a world of other data and information out there that could be used to inform decision making, and sometimes I think we overlook it. And I think finding ways to integrate these other sources of data would also be important.
Okay, and so in terms of leadership and collaboration, you know, I think one of the things, we've talked about it, and, you know, we know that, you know, that none of the efforts are going to be something that we can be in a silo and stay in our lanes on individually, that it is going to take collaboration and really a big community effort in order to work on the homelessness issue. You know, we don't necessarily look at it as our issue alone, the city's issue alone, or the county's issue alone. It actually takes us working as partners in order to work on the homelessness issue. So now, in conclusion, you know, some of the things that we want to talk about is the county and citywide engagement on the efforts to increase affordable housing and accessible housing to people with common barriers. And, you know, those barriers are things like previous evictions, criminal history, you know, just you name it. Those are the things that are usually a hindrance, or income factors that hinder families getting out of homelessness. We would also like to engage and incentivize landlords to rent to people with common household barriers. You know, I said, like, some of the things that we attempt to do is to put any of the providers that are part of our network on the same page on the services that we are going to say that we're going to offer landlords. And so we would like the city's help in engaging and really kind of promoting those efforts with landlords as well. We would also like to increase the network of connections to improve landlord relationships, you know. We want to be able to attain a seat at the table for better collaboration efforts in all respects. We talked a little bit about expanding shelter resources for youth, family, and single women is one of the things that we would like to engage the city in as well with us. And also just to continue to work together to better improve the homeless response system overall.
So, Ms. Sneaker.
Thank you. Sort of to the point that Council President Brumlin was raising before, I think all of these asks are really good ones. The one that strikes me as being very specific and low-hanging is a seat at the table. And given your on-the-ground experience mm-hmm. and the need for us to have the information that you have to help us make decisions, are there specific seats at specific tables that it would be helpful to get you on? And if not right now, maybe in a follow-up, but it just seems like absolutely your voices at the table are important.
Well, you know, not just to get us at the table, but, you know, to keep you engaged, too, you know, in, like, some of our efforts, you know, like, even if it's kind of like a round robin with a city council member maybe attending our Heading Home Ramsey meetings or, you know, so it's not just that we want to be, you know, at the table. We would like to keep that engagement going. So it's not just us being there, but we would like, it would help you be better informed, too, to be at the table and a lot of the things and projects that we engage in.
And I know, and I think Ms. Birch is back there, the annual housing director, and she and we're setting up a housing advisory board. Yeah, so I was like,
yeah, I think if you if you have internal committees that you think that you would be valuable to hear from the community, then those might be potential seats at the table. I think, you know, outside-in governance may have been an opportunity that I think is now quite a ways down the road in terms of your partnership and your work together. But that would be an example of something, if that were to be convened in the future in any form, that perhaps Heading Home Ramsey should be invited to participate. Because there really might be opportunities for us to provide the perspectives of the community in a different way that would help for not only the decision-making in front of you right that moment, but for future planning.
Ms. Prince.
And I really appreciate that a number of you with Heading Home Ramsey have been, and Lonnie in particular, have been part of our discussion about homeless families in our public schools. I want to say Ms. Guild is in the room, and I just want to say in terms of the city's responsibility here, and in this case, I feel like a broken record. We really, as a city, need to set a very aggressive housing production goal. I think that when we do that, we will bring a lot of potential partners to the table, but we've got to get people focused on that vision of a high number of units that we're going to develop, a large percentage of which need to be affordable, and to your point earlier, at that low-wage worker level, the 30% of area median income. And through no fault of anybody's, that money is, I mean, through no fault of ours, I mean at the city, that money is really hard to come by to get down to those deep affordability levels. We have been able to do it 10 years ago, 15 years ago. We could get down to those deeply affordable levels. And I've been in a couple of conversations this week about our low-income housing tax credit programs, which do address affordability, but the competition for that, for the 9% money in particular, is extreme, and we need to find new sources to get down to deep affordability. So the fact that 80% or 60% of area median income just isn't doing the job, we are all really clear about that. That what we are able to build in terms of programs that are easily available to us are serving people that on my side of town are higher rents than market rate units. So we've got to figure out how to crack that nut, and I appreciate your calling that out, because that clearly is our responsibility at the city level, and we need to do it in conjunction and across jurisdictions with our other government partners. So thank you for what you've identified. When you got to that final list, I realized how many of those things we had really talked about and that we're in agreement on in terms of where we go next with all of this. So thanks for your work and everything you're doing to make this information publicly known and accessible.
Thank you.
Mr. Tuttle.
Thank you. Just a clarity question here. You know, I look at the governing board, and I don't see a county commissioner or a city council member on it, and I'm just curious, why is that?
We don't know. We have invited, and the city is present, Joe Collins from the city and Jen Bruntlett from the city do represent. But as I think I mentioned, there had previously been an advisory board, which was actually initiated by the city council and the county board. And I have invited, I have done outreach to invite and even maybe an assistant. We would really love to have any of you or any of your staff join us at Heading Home Ramsey to be able to provide, you know, ongoing updates every week that could be helpful for you. So I
just think that, you know, in order for us to solve the issue before us, it's going to take policymakers, as you mentioned earlier, needing leadership.
Yes.
And I think the group here is great for implementation and doing the work, but from a governance standpoint, mm-hmm. I think we do need policymaker on this board. I think our work, whether it's the Twin City Land Bank or Family Housing Fund,
yes.
We have elected and policymaker at the table. There's movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
yes.
I don't know how to get there, but I think that we should, to make this equitable, we need to have county commissioner from the suburb and from St. Paul collaborating, and I think that this council would be more than happy to volunteer and be on this so that we can push the needle.
In the spirit of full disclosure, one of the initial contacts that my constituent Deb Padgett had with me and that then Maria and I talked about was the invitation to us to serve on the board, and I said, I think that sounds great, but maybe a first step would be for Heading Home Ramsey to come present to us here to tell us what they're doing. And so that way, if folks had interest, we could then do that. But it sounds to me here and before like that invitation, exactly as you're saying, is wide open and really desired.
That is a really great stole my thunder comment that you made just there, because certainly that was going to be like my closing.
Do it.
We just want to make sure we're perfectly clear that you are invited and welcome and desired at the Heading Home Ramsey table, and that we are ready and prepared to work with you and support you in any manner in the work that you're doing.
Great.
Thank you so much.
And I've heard people sounding like they might be the ones that like to volunteer to do that. So it's going to be hold folks accountable.
Feet to the fire.
Great. So are there any other closing thoughts before we adjourn? We went a little bit longer. Yeah.
One comment, when you had mentioned, Councilmember Necker, about low-hanging fruit, I think there's a very, very low-hanging fruit in terms of engaging landlords that are within the community. And that would be, it was an arduous process to get who all of those landlords are that have certificates of occupancy listed within the city of St. Paul. Department of Safety and Inspections has all of that information, but it was the only information that is collected by the city are mailing addresses. So if there is a way to actually reach out to those landlords and get email addresses, it would be an amazing difference in facilitating communication and networking. The 25, 27 landlords that came to the first landlord event that Councilmember Prince sponsored were hungry for that. They were saying, is there a way that we can get together? Is there a way you can convene more of these? Is there a way that we can just set up our own network? How about, are you going to do more? Can we? When's the next one? And it was clear that there's a need in this community for landlords to have those resources and a way to reach them. It was only through working with Councilman Prince and now Councilmember Necker, thank you very much, who will be mailing out invitations to those landlords to come to this event, that we had anybody come. So that's our kind of initial contact with so many smaller landlords, where we can actually offer them some of the benefits of, like, here's the rental rehab program. Here's the 4D program that just got rolled out. These are benefits to you as a small business holder. And, oh, by the way, let's talk a little bit about the homeless situation and how you can also benefit your community in that way as well. So that's, to me, low-hanging fruit. It's just basic communication.
Well, and I think that even beyond just that use, for us to be able to email the landlords in the cities, just, and I believe that that is actually something that came out of the housing conversation that we had as well, and it's underway. But I agreed. I mean, to think, I mean, why are we mailing things to landlords? And that's, a lot of our systems were built for in a time that we didn't have email.
Yes.
So
yes.
When people are like, email, I hate email, text me. So, I mean, that's even changing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
but absolutely. Up. And I love those examples of something that we can do right now.
Yes.
Well, I just emailed our director of the Department of Safety and Inspections while you were talking, so right now.
Good.
because I spent almost a quarter of my ward budget mailing out those invitations to the event. So it would be so much easier, so thank you.
Exactly. All right, I'm just going to honor our time here. We ran over. Thank you. Thank you so much for this presentation. Thank you for the work that you and the partners in this room do every day. It is so valued and appreciated. And my biggest takeaway is that this is a conversation that needs to be ongoing, and we're very committed to that. So we appreciate your time in this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All right, with that, we are adjourned until later this afternoon.